we Americans may have revolted against the English king, but we're fascinated by royalty. Whether it's the dramas about Elizabeth and Victoria, or those pictures of Prince Harry and his fiancée, or stories and pictures of Princess Diana, Prince William and baby Princess Charlotte and Prince George, we just can't get enough of their royal doings and their weddings. And we're just as gaga about our own created American royalty of celebrities, entertainers, and sports figures. And the powerful. I still bask in the reflected glory of meeting President Kennedy when I was a little child and he came to visit the embassy. We are fascinated by displays of power and wealth, and we look at celebrity preferences for the validation of our own desires. So when we get to the part of the Christmas story where the three kings, wise men, come to worship Jesus, we get a stroke of validation for our own desire to worship him, because, ooh, that puts us in good company. Even wise and learned kings recognize him as one sent from God. But really, what do we know about these magi from the East? The stories that we have around them conjure up the pictures of camels and deserts and stars and servants and riches, a kingdom of scholars, astronomers, who traveled from a distant land and over the night and saw evil kings and followed this magic star. We like to paint them in different races and exotic cultures and emphasize Jesus as being a light to the nations. And people imbue those gifts they brought with all kinds of predictive theological meanings. And then they make jokes about their practicality, about whether they maybe should have brought Pampers and a casserole. But as with interpreting all Bible stories, the big question, the main question that we are asked to ask the text is to wonder, how does this story reveal the character of God? For the Jewish Christians who were the first readers of Matthew's gospel story, the idea that God would invite magi to be the only ones in his story to recognize God in Jesus, that would have been shocking. Pious Jews had no more use for magi than pious Christians today have for fortune telling and astrology and the occult. Their practices were considered heretical and anathema, and imputing of God's sovereignty to parts of the creation like stars and moons and elements, and an attempt to manipulate God. Ugh, heresy. Matthew's readers and hearers would think, charlatans, hocus pocus. Magi is where we get that word, magician. And the gifts were stock items that were used in their magic. And yet, God chose them to call using a theologically inappropriate method of a star sign, called people whose theology was all screwed up, and did it without requiring that they be able to expound on creedal statements, without requiring that they first understand all the law and the prophets, so that they could profoundly, profoundly appreciate what the incarnation meant. What does the Spirit need us to hear from this? Well, here at Advent, we've heard that there's no litmus test for being part of the community of God in this place. We don't ask that before they can participate fully here, that people learn all the traditions of the church, important as those are, traditions that truly shape our faith, the shape of the liturgy, the meaning of the sacraments, the way things are done here at Advent. We invite all whom God calls here to participate fully in worship and service and in caring for one another in their own way, in their own time, because it's not about us. God invited the Magi in a way that they could understand. And that's our job too. When you talk to your friends and neighbors, talk to them in ways they can understand. You don't need to go up to them and say, let me tell you about God and my church. Ask them for their story. Ask them where they are. And hear what they need to say and say what they need to hear. Whether or not their understanding of God and how God works has anything to do with what you think. Find common ground. And then you make the movement toward it so that together you may share in the joy of the fellowship that God is anxious for you to have with that person. And then there's the three gifts, which is why we assume there were three wise men. Culturally, this part of the story turned gift-giving on its head. In that culture, people only gave gifts to those who could reciprocate. Mary and Joseph did not have any gifts to give them back. They certainly didn't have the mojo to get the Magi in good with Herod. And yet, the wise men brought their gifts with no expectation of repayment, with no debt of gratitude attached. Their giving undermined the normal political order of things, showing not the power of the three kings, but the undoing of their status and entitlement as benefactors. What happened at the manger was not the expected gift exchange, reinforcing the structures of oppression, but the beginning of the fulfillment of the prophecy that the Messiah would cast down the mighty from their thrones. These gifts were freely given, freely received, in response to love, not in anticipation of reciprocity. So there's a place in this story that we see another aspect of God's character. We see revealed a God who loves unconditionally. The church tends to disparage the Santa myth as making Christmas all about the gifts. But one thing that myth does is lift up unconditional giving. Kids don't give presents to Santa. They may or may not leave milk and cookies as a thank offering, but it's not required. This unconditional giving is so hard for us humans that we've added the naughty and nice lists and the elf on the shelf, that in some way we can say that we earned the gifts. Then they're not gifts, they're salary. But the story of how God gives and the response to how God gives, as illustrated by the Magi, is reflected here at Advent in how you give. You brought toys for poor children, but you didn't expect any gratitude from them because the toys were made available to their parents to give to their children. So there's no sense for you that the children would have any sense of thanksgiving toward you in their hearts toward you, or feel that you were their benefactor or that they owed you something. The Magi may not have known much correct theology, but they did understand that the proper response to divine love and inclusion is worship. They did what you are doing today. They came, they worshiped, and they brought an offering. You give God your time and your praise, and you're also invited to share your gifts. Some of the time that you give is represented by your money, which you exchange for your time. Other gifts that you share are talents and skills that God's first given you, and which are in constant use in your lives, but also around here in picking up trash and turning off the lights. In hospitality, from smiling to the person who's next to you and telling them your name, or serving as greeters and ushers and communion assistants. And when you go from here, you can continue to share those gifts with God's people everywhere. Hugs and phone calls and emails and pleasantries to strangers. Strangers? The idea that by calling the Magi, God was revealing that all distinctions between people of different ethnicities and religions is dissolving, it can be scary. And fear is a powerful thing. Look what it did to Herod. In response to his fear, Herod, along with the chief priests and scribes, conspired to find the Messiah and kill him. They're not going to succeed this time. But much later in the story, there'll be an alliance between the political and religious leaders of the day who will not only conspire against him, but succeed in the crucifixion. And we are not immune to their fears. We are not immune to the fears that drove them. We have our fears, whether it's about that our retirement won't be enough, or we'll lose our job, or have family disappointments, or have to move, or be crime victims. Fear of the outsider and fear of change can make us selfish and cause us to close in, create tribalism. Some may rely on guns and gates and security cameras and tax shelters. Some may forego the joys of travel and of giving and of meeting new people because of fear. But this world of tribal fears is precisely the world that God came into as the living, breathing, and vulnerable promise that God chose to come and live and die for us as we are, so that we might have proof of God's unconditional and inclusive love. And for that, we can say, thanks be to God. Amen.